Welcome to Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm your host, Allison with a Y, here with your co-host, my co-host,
Patrick. Hit me. Hello.
Unfortunately, our lovely Allison with an I is absent today, so you just have Patrick and Y.
She got the itis.
She got the itis. R.I.P.
RIP.
Rip I.
good news is that if her illness is fatal, the dead don't die. So Allison with an I, if you're out there listening to us on your sick day, chin up. It'll be okay, even if the worst happens.
Yeah, if fracking causes the earth to fall off of its normal axis and what increase its rotation or whatever, yeah, then you're good. You're good. Anyways, that brings us to our film for the week, which is The Dead Don't Die. It is a 2019 zombie horror comedy written and directed by independent film legend Jim Jarmusch. It follows an expansive cast of characters in a very small rural town of Centerville. Among our ensemble are the police chief, played by Bill Murray, and his deputies, played by Adam Driver and Chloe Sevigny.
Mm.
Ugh,
we love her.
A mysterious funeral home owner, played by Tilda Swinton, even more. Ugh,
we love her.
Ugh. The all-seeing hermit Bob, played by Tom Waits.
Ugh, we love him. I mean, you can just do that for literally everyone in this cast.
You can do that for the entire cast. A cantankerous, racist farmer, played by Steve Buscemi, which...
Oh, we love him.
We love him. We love him. Yeah. We love him. A hardware store owner played by Danny Glover.
Oh, love him.
We love him. A gas station nerd store clerk played by Caleb Landry Jones.
Wait, say that again. That's an important distinction. A gas station / nerd store clerk, because we've got a gas station that is also like a comic book store.
Yes, kind of, which is very niche, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. Who else we got?
And then there is a trio of young travelers passing through town, played by Selena Gomez.
Oh, queen.
Queen. Austin Butler, which...
Okay. We love him.
Well, I don't, but
oh, really?
Pop Off King.
Yeah, oh, interesting. We'll have to discuss that.
And Lucas Sabat, who never heard of him before, but...
We're not going to name the other two and not
love
list him.
That would be rude.
He did great for his five lines that he had in this. God bless.
Oh, and did we mention... Iggy Pop as a zombie. This motley crew grapples with a zombie apocalypse caused by the effects of polar fracking, which has thrown the earth off its axis. Boy, is that a lot to chew on.
Sure is. We shared a bottle of rosé before we started today's episode. I don't know why. We don't usually really pregame episodes in that way, but...
The weather is beautiful.
If we have weird or unusual energy today, if you're enjoying this podcast even more than you usually do, that's why.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Blame it on the rosé.
Blame it on the rosé. That's a song, I think.
So yeah, what a description. What a cast. What a premise.
Mm-hmm.
What a director.
Mm-hmm.
I know, Patrick, you're a big fan of Jim Jarmusch. I didn't know anything about Jim Jarmusch before knowing you. So tell me about your experience with Jim Jarmusch.
So I actually don't quite remember which of his movies I saw first, but I think it was Night on Earth. Have you seen that one?
No. I've only seen... one other of his films.
Oh, okay. Which was Only Lovers Left Alive?
Yes, it was. Oh, yeah.
His one other foray into horror.
Yeah.
Appropriately enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started with Night on Earth, which is a wonderful movie. You would love it. It's four different stories that take place in taxi cabs in different cities across the world. And in his usual style, some of them are very funny, some of them are very dark, some of them are very heartbreaking. But he just has such a unique... voice. Always has had that independent film kind of spirit. He's always trying weird ideas for his entire career, and working with incredible actors. He's worked with, you know, Tom Waits, he's Bill Murray, he's worked with a lot of these people so many times.
Tilda,
of course. And there are also smaller roles, like the diner waitress in this, that he's worked with over decades, you know, not even notable stars, but he just has his people who he works with over and over again. And I like that sort of repertory cast.
Yeah.
He always has incredible soundtracks for his movies. A lot of the time he works with notable musicians on his soundtracks. And he's a rock and roll guy. He has his own band. And he is so closely tied to a lot of the music that I love the most. And he just feels like one of those sweet spot, just comfort food filmmakers to me. Mm-hmm. What was your perception of him going into this, having seen only Lovers Left Alive?
I think my expectations were high because I fucking loved Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah.
You had told me for a long time that I needed to see that movie for so many reasons. Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston being the stars, being at the top of the list, but also it being this vampire love story that also takes place in Detroit, which is, you know, Patrick and I both have roots. Our families have deep roots in Detroit.
Still live a half hour drive from there, go there all the time.
A place that's very special to both of us, you know, separate from each other. And I loved that movie. So yeah, I have really positive, perception of Jim Jarmusch, in part because of all the positive things that you've said about him over the years, but also in part because the one other film experience that I had with him, which really blew me out of the water.
He's also just cool as hell.
Right. He seems like a really cool person.
He has this, I'm talking even just sort of aesthetically. He has this like pure white hair, like vibrant head of hair. I don't know. He's probably 60, you know, mid, late 60s, I would guess at this point. Always in sunglasses, black leather, just has that rock star energy. But from what I can tell, it's not a dick. Lots of people seem to love working with him over the years, and I've never heard anything bad about him. So just an idiosyncratic indie film king.
Yeah.
Truly. Like, yeah. He's been doing it for so long.
Yeah. And this, I mean, it felt like this film for him was a little bit of a step out of his usual stuff.
For sure.
It was a little bit more, well, it was definitely more advertised when it came out.
Yes.
Than I think his other films.
Well, and I think maybe that almost as much as anything is what does set it apart, because I think there was considerable commercial potential here.
Yes.
In that it's a zombie comedy starring, you know, a slew of at least recognizable, at most very bankable.
Yes.
You know, fucking Bill Murray and Adam Driver has gotten to be a huge name.
Yeah.
You know, there's some stars in this. And I think it was advertised accordingly. I mean, Selena Gomez played up in the marketing, I think, way more than she actually appears in the movie.
Because, probably,
of course, it's Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez is cool like that, though. She would. I don't think in 2019 I would have been like, yeah, Selena Gomez would do this. But like now my understanding of Selena Gomez, I was like, yeah, she's cool. She would do something like this.
Yeah, I remember when I saw the trailers for this being a little, I guess, surprised by that at the time. But since then, it's like, oh, yeah, no, this, she's cool. She's not just a Disney, vapid Disney kid, you know?
My understanding of Selena Gomez for a long time was, yeah, just her being a Disney kid. She was more in my younger sister's era of Disney Channel. And I kind of like wrote her off for a long time. And then I became a fan of her in Only Murders in the Building, you know, and I was like, oh, she actually, she's extremely funny. She actually seems like genuinely like a pretty cool person. And so like now my 2025 understanding of Selena Gomez, I'm like, yeah, she would do a Jim Jarmusch film. And that's so cool.
Yeah, for sure. It is a weird outlier for him. It's certainly so different if we're going to compare, you know, to his other horror genre movie. Like, Only Lovers Left Alive is a weird, slow-paced, sexy, sad romance.
Yeah.
And this plays a little more like a traditional comedy,
A little more.
More so than Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But it's not Zombieland, which I think is how they marketed it.
Yes.
I mean, maybe not quite Zombieland, but right. still, it was marketed as like mainstream, goofy zombie.
Think Shaun of
jokes.
The Dead, think Zombieland. Sure. Like those classic, well, what are now considered classic zombie horror comedies. Yeah. Zom horror coms.
Mm-hmm. But, and I think, you know, we discussed at the end of last episode, this didn't do well.
No, not at all.
It was not received well by critics. It was received worse by audiences.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, it did not do too well at the box office. It grossed a worldwide total of $15.3 million, which is pretty awful for a pretty wide release, which I think this got. I don't have any budget info in front of me, but... That's bad. Anyways, it didn't do very well.
No, not at all.
And I think, you know, almost as much as anything, it's a marketing issue, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's not mainstream and laugh a minute enough for your mainstream, your Zombieland audience. And also, frankly, I think it's a little, maybe too slight for... your Jarmusch diehards or your indie film people, maybe.
Yeah, it's a very unique film experience.
Yeah.
I don't think this is not a dig at all, but I don't think I've seen anything quite like it before.
Yeah.
It really defied expectations in a lot of ways. I don't think I could have ever guessed accurately what I was about to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the marketing, based on expectations, based on the director, based on the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not defied subverted expectations might be mm-hmm. actually a better way to say that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's as good a place as any to ask what made you pick this movie. This, I know, was something that you had kind of had your eye on since we relaunched the podcast, since you joined as a recurring host. What attracted you to it?
My prior experience with Jim Jarmusch, mm-hmm. for sure. The cast. And I am a fan of zombie horror comedies.
Mm-hmm.
Shaun of the Dead is easily... I would put it in my top 20 comedy films.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it so much.
It's a banger.
It's so good. I really enjoyed Zombieland 2. I have a really soft spot for zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's zombie comedies or zombie dramas, I love them. And yeah, that cast, that fucking cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the first time seeing the trailer for it and seeing Bill Murray and Adam Driver and immediately being like, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, yes, because I love Adam Driver. I've loved him since the days of Girls. And okay, mm-hmm. like, I feel like I need to share this on the podcast. I've had like this fascination with Adam Driver since he was a tiny bit part in Lincoln. Lincoln. Yep. He had like two lines maybe mm-hmm. in it. And I remember watching that film and seeing him and being like, I need to know who this person is because he was so unique. He had such a unique energy to him.
Was that before Girls?
That was before Girls, wow. Yes, because I remember watching Girls and being like, I've seen this person before.
Okay, so the show Girls and the movie Lincoln both came out in 2012. So
it was
around
right
the same time.
Early
yeah.
in his
agent
film career.
Was working their fucking ass off that
yeah,
year.
Yeah, shout out to Adam Driver's agent in yeah. 2012.
But no, he's fascinating. And the cast is incredible in general. I mean, especially because we didn't even touch on everybody, you know,
right.
like Sturgill Simpson. And again, going back to his connection to music, is an incredible musician who wrote an original theme tune for this movie that recurs over and over again.
Yes.
And also shows up in the movie as a zombie dragging a guitar at one point.
Oh, shit. That yeah. was Sturgill Simpson?
Yep, yep, yep.
I've never seen Sturgill Simpson before, so I had no idea, but that is so funny.
I haven't seen him many times, so I certainly wouldn't have recognized him under zombie makeup. But when I saw a zombie dragging a guitar, I was like, this has got to be somebody. And sure enough, it's Sturgill.
Amazing.
It's just a who's who. And really what this gave me the vibe of is like one of those Apatow movies, like honestly, kind of some of the worst of the Apatow movies, like the ones that I don't like as much. Like This Is the End, which I know lots of people love that movie. I'm just okay, not one of
them. I kind
of
love that movie.
But it's a hangout movie.
Yes. You know?
It's a lot of young comedians of the same generation getting together and clearly just having a great time, which, you know, your mileage may vary and mine is quite different from a lot of people on that one. But it struck me as kind of a hangout movie, even more so than Jarmusch's usual style, where it was just, hey, let's get together like as many people I love as I can and just make a weird zombie thing.
Yeah, that's very much what it felt like. I'm sure a lot of this cast signed on, people who hadn't necessarily been in his films prior, were like, yeah, a chance to do a Jim Jarmusch film that's a zombie horror comedy, I'm in. Like, I'm sure if I were like a film actor of some note and somebody had just said to me, hey, do you want to do a Jim Jarmusch film that's a zombie horror comedy? Without even looking at the script, I would have been like, absolutely yes. Like, sign me in.
Duh. Clear
like,
my schedule.
Fuck yeah. Like, let's go.
I mean, especially because you probably don't really have to clear your schedule because I'm thinking he shoots these pretty quick and dirty.
Right.
So you can probably knock out your role in a couple of days.
Yeah, and nobody, at least in this film, has too much screen time.
Right, exactly.
Because there's so many heavy hitters. There's so many characters to follow.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, I can get into my feelings about later, but like, you know, yeah. Exactly.
With this ensemble cast, who are the standouts for you? Like, what hit you the hardest? What stuck with you the most out of this motley crew of characters that we're dealing with?
The ones that stuck with me the most, and I don't entirely understand my motivations behind this, Caleb Landry Jones, and I don't know if it's because I think he's hot or because like I really enjoyed his character and his performance. I think maybe a little bit of both.
He was charming.
He's a cutie. He's a cutie. But also he was really charming in this and a nice breath of fresh air after his Get Out character.
Oh yeah,
it's nice to see him in a role where I'm rooting for him versus being like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah, just feeling your skin crawl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So him, he really stood out to me. And also Steve Buscemi's character, who played an absolute piece of shit.
But so well,
because Steve Buscemi can do that. And like, also, you see Steve Buscemi play a piece of shit, and you can never hate Steve Buscemi playing a piece of shit because he's just Steve Buscemi. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I love Steve Buscemi. I've been a lifelong Steve Buscemi fan.
Yeah.
Ever since I saw Steve Buscemi in Con Air, which he played a despicable character, mind you. But like, I've been kind of fascinated with him since I was a child.
He's one of the greats,
man. He is one of the greats. We don't deserve Steve Buscemi.
I sometimes make the incorrect assumption that he always plays Steve Buscemi, but fuck no. He has such versatility.
He does. I mean, there's always like a Steve Buscemi quality to every character he plays.
Sure.
But he does still play like a wide array of human beings.
Yeah, my favorites were Adam Driver. I just can't get enough Adam Driver at anything.
Same.
He is always so deeply committed to whatever he's doing. He's an incredible serious actor, but also when he's doing comedy, he commits so fucking hard to whatever bit he's doing. And it's so much funnier for that. He understands that he's in a comedy, but he plays it so seriously that sometimes you question whether he actually gets it. He definitely does.
Yes.
But the level of seriousness that he commits to comedy is delightful.
He's the kind of actor that we need to see in a Muppet film where he's the only human playing straight against all of the Muppets.
Yeah, remake The Christmas Carol with him as Scrooge.
My vote is Pride and Prejudice with him as Mr. Darcy and everyone else.
Oh.
Our Muppets. Oh. Let's do it.
I'll be thinking about that for a little while. But him in his fucking red smart car in this, jetting around Centerville in his little short sleeve policeman's uniform and his little dorky digital watch and his fucking glasses, was so ridiculous and also very hot.
Such
he was
a cutie.
So cute.
He's
this.
So cute.
Yeah.
He can be fucking Kylo Ren, a little whiny piece of shit. And you're just like, oh, he's so cute.
Yeah. 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 And also the way he says ghouls is such a delight. They used it for the trailer because they knew what they had. But anyways, here's a little sound drop of him saying ghouls, and then I'll probably use it way too many times in the rest of the episode because I can't get enough of it.
I'm thinking zombies.
What?
You know, zombies. Ghouls. The undead.
The other character or actor in this who delighted me the most was Tilda Swinton. Of course. She is not Scottish, but she does a delightful Scottish accent.
Perfect Scottish accent.
As this like weird funeral home owner who is obsessed with Buddhism and kind of Eastern spiritual traditions.
Kind of like the character that she plays in Doctor Strange.
Yes, very weird.
Yes.
Honestly, very weird. I'm like, okay, how many times are we going to have Tilda Swinton as a white woman playing someone who like maybe should be Asian? At least in Doctor Strange. In Doctor Strange, that character was actually Asian in the comics, so there's a weird whitewashing element to it. In this movie, it tracks a little more. I mean, whatever. You know, white people all over the world adopt Eastern traditions and learn how to use a fucking katana like she does in this. Still such an odd choice, but again, talk about an actor committing so fucking hard to a weird character. She was just delightful. A couple zombies wake up in her funeral home at one point while she's beating a full face of drag makeup
on these
corpses, and they start to sit up, and her reaction is so nonchalant, and she just immediately pulls out her katana and with a single swipe decapitates them
both.
Amazing.
Just with like exasperation.
Yeah.
Like she's mostly annoyed.
Yeah.
More than anything. She's not afraid.
She's like her work has been ruined.
Yeah. She's just like,
oh, makeup job ruined.
I put all of this effort into what?
Yep. Amazing. What a queen. Love her so much.
She's amazing. I love Tilda and everything.
Chloe killed it too. I mean, Chloe Sevigny has a long history on Amon.
Oh boy, does she.
We have stanned Chloe for many, many years, going back to
what was that?
Hashtag Horror. She was in Hashtag Horror. I think that was the first movie for this show that she was in. She was in Anti-Birth, which
Anti-Birth,
is an incredible movie.
That episode of Amon lives rent-free in my brain.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why?
It was one of the earlier ones that I listened to, and it was just a really good episode. Because it was her and...
Oh, Natasha Lyonne.
Natasha Lyonne.
Who I believe they're friends in real life.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know. I was just like... I just have very distinct memories of listening to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe we dropped a lot of like bong rip sound effects into that episode
probably.
Because they're constantly getting high on everything in that movie.
And Chloe Sevigny. And I think both of our favorite seasons of American Horror Story.
Oh, yes. Oh. Hotel.
American Horror Story Hotel. Oh. Yes. The best season ever.
God bless her. But I mean, we're just like waxing poetic about all the incredible actors who are in this. And we could for, you know, probably an hour talk about how much we love these people outside of this movie and also how we love the quirky shit that they do in this movie.
But we should actually talk about the movie itself.
Yes.
And Patrick, I'm curious what your thoughts were on it. Did it work as a comedy? Did it work as a horror film? What are your thoughts on how it kind of straddled the different genres?
I thought it worked very well for me as a comedy. As someone who is inclined to enjoy Jim Jarmusch's sense of humor and to enjoy the energy that all of these actors bring to comedy in general, the sort of deadpan, slightly bemused tone of everything was very funny to me and also worked really well for me as far as suiting sort of some of the political references or themes of this that I think we may be a little better served to discuss in the spoiler room. Mm-hmm. But it worked so well for me, and also felt weirdly, I mean, the movie came out in 2019, but felt weirdly apropos to our apocalyptic current moment and the way we're all kind of processing it, which is just kind of sleepwalking through apocalyptic events, which is, it's a funny tone for a comedy, especially when you do it as dryly and as deadpan as they do in this, to me, you know, because it's just like, it's just people in a small town and they're just, oh, I guess they're zombies, you know, is kind of the attitude. And, oh, I guess we got to figure out what to do about this. There's not a ton of hysteria necessarily. Yeah. It's just, oh.
Yeah, a lot of oh.
Yeah, big Midwest energy in this movie.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Horror, you know, not so much, but I don't think it's necessarily supposed to be there so much. It's not scary. I enjoyed the way it portrayed and visualized zombies, you know, when they get wounded or decapitated, black smoke comes
that
out of
really
them
cool.
instead of like blood or gore. That was very cool.
Yeah, I really like that was a unique take on zombies, and I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not really scary for me. It's not scary at all, really.
Yeah.
But I found it very funny. How about you? How did you feel about kind of the tone and genre of all this?
I definitely had to adjust my expectations through it. I think I needed to go into it more with being like, I'm about to watch a Jim Jarmusch film than I'm about to watch a zombie horror comedy. Because I like dry humor, but I wasn't necessarily expecting it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the marketing.
Yeah.
I still very much remember the marketing. The marketing, I think, very much took the sort of comedic highs of the film and kind of put all of those in the trailers.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, for the most part, to me, it was like pretty slow paced, pretty low key, very dry humor, which I, once again, I really enjoy dry humor, but it was an expectation adjustment. Do I think, you know, it fits the horror genre in the sense that it's about zombies and then there's a little bit of zombie gore, you know? So in that sense, it fulfills that part of the genre, but it is definitely primarily it's dry, dark humor.
Yeah. It's existential horror. Anything. There's the horror of human existence and kind of humanity's time running out that is, you know, really becomes a factor in the end of the movie, which again, we'll get into more in the spoiler room. But I think if there's horror here, it's just kind of existential dread kind of underpinning all this dry humor.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you go into this looking for Zombieland, it ain't, you know,
you're
gonna be
disappointed. Not getting Shaun of the Dead. You're not getting Zombieland. I'll have more thoughts on that when we get to the actual spoiler room or pre-spoiler room. But I mean, yeah, it just took expectation adjustment, but once I got there, I think I was able to like understand what it was doing and what was happening.
Right. Yeah. And so you've referred to how it defied your expectations a few times. What were you expecting? Were you expecting a zombie land or what,
I was expecting
what
a little,
did that look like in your mind?
I was expecting a little bit higher energy, a little bit faster paced. There was one part I was watching it and there was just a lot of the dialogue. There was a lot of air. There was a lot of air in the dialogue, which is not a criticism. I think is just genre defying when you think of a zombie horror comedy, or you think of horror, or you think of comedy, or you think of zombies. It's a very unique experience all on its own.
Right, because we have, I think, certain expectations of like an indie horror movie. You know, again, to go to Only Lovers Left Alive, I think if you go into that, you're expecting kind of what you end up getting, which is a very slow-paced, moody, weirdly romantic thing that happens to have some vampire shit in it. there's not so much of a template, I think, for sort of an indie or alternative horror comedy. You know, you expect something so punchy and, high energy and joke a minute and lots of genre references, a lot of, meta humor.
Well, there's a lot of meta humor in this film, let's be real.
Okay, fair. Yeah.
But it was, like, very meta.
Right. And what I'm trying to say is just, I think there's not so much of a template established for what an indie or sort of alt horror comedy looks like. At least not something that gets a mainstream release like this did.
Yes. Agreed.
And we keep harping on this, but I think it's kind of crucial to why this didn't do well and why it's been kind of forgotten since then, because there wasn't a model. You know, there wasn't a template. It didn't fit anyone's expectations, and it faded off into the background, which I think is, now having seen it, a fucking shame, because I really enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're getting to that portion of the show, I think. We're approaching where we review this and say, view it, cue it, or screw it. But I had a great time with this.
That's good.
What else do we have to touch on before we get to actually reviewing it?
Yeah, so early on in this film, kind of when the zombie stuff starts to appear, we get Iggy Pop right off the bat. There's this diner, right, where like all the locals go to. It's that classic diner, almost out of like a Twin Peaks. Like, it's kind of got that energy to it, you know?
Oh, and I loved the way this small town was depicted in general. Yes. Like, the locations that you see when you first see the establishing shots of the town are, like, the sign that says Centerville, like, a normal place to live or something, it says on the sign. You see the diner, the police station, the juvenile detention center, the gas station, like, the iconic locations. And it was so funny to me that one of those was a juvenile detention center.
Yeah, which we haven't even gotten into.
This is our town.
That whole, because there are, like, a few kids from a juvenile detention center that we follow as well, mm-hmm. amongst this massive cast of characters that you follow. But kind of the action all sort of starts off in this diner where this beloved diner waitress, who everybody in the town knows,
gets
murked by a couple zombies, one of them being Iggy Pop, who, mind you, I think was born to be a zombie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, perfect.
God. And it was hilarious. I loved these zombies because they go right in for the coffee. Because in this film, like, these zombies, sort of the whole thing is that they as zombies kind of take a hyperfixation in the interests that they had while they were living. Mm-hmm. And him and his zombie companion both apparently enjoyed coffee when they were still humans. And after they, you know, half eat these two waitresses, just decide to down some coffee, which I would too.
Yeah, and that convention of the zombies seeking out their hyperfixations in life. Again, probably better for spoiler room, but contributes to one of the darkest and funniest scenes in the whole movie for me, kind of late. But yeah, we'll come back to that in a little bit. But it's interesting just the way the origins of this zombie outbreak are depicted. And again, it's very low key. It's very ope again, you know? It's just, you see kind of some TV reports and it's like, oh, there's something wrong with the earth. Might be polar fracking, which is a term that's introduced in this. I don't know if I've never heard the term polar fracking. I don't think anybody's fracking at the poles specifically. I might be wrong about that, though. We'll find out when the earth gets knocked off its axis, I guess, and the zombies start coming to life. But yeah, very just kind of slow burn. Everybody watching the news and just, well, that's weird. What do we do about that? You know, which is very, again, true to life. Like, what the hell are you going to do except sit in your motel room, see a weird news report and be like, oh, I guess we should lock the door.
Yeah. You know, feeling like kind of right now, like we're sort of living through an apocalyptic situation, that it feels very, very true.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying about
the banality of these sort of really devastating situations happening, these devastating events taking place while you're just like living life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's like every day a different executive order. Well, I guess I'll, you know, post on Facebook about that or well, not tweet about it, post on Blue Sky, I guess now. And it's like the same thing with the zombies. It's just very low key. It's just, well, I don't know. What can we do about that? There's nothing we can really do about that. Hope the zombies don't catch us, you know, lock the door. How do you kill zombies? You know, it's all just very, again, low key. There's not a lot of action heroism other than this very sort of, again, uncanny ethereal way that Tilda Swinton handles the zombies. And it turns out there's a reason that she's uncanny and ethereal.
Right.
And we'll get into that
in the spoiler room.
But for the most part, it's just everyday schlubs being like, well,
doing their best to try to survive.
Yeah. And I love that. I don't really think I've seen that, this subject matter handled that way before.
Yeah, it's unique. And I also think it's another part of it that subverted expectations.
100%.
And maybe led to its lack of success.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot about this movie that feels very like, oh, you're just in the doldrums of life.
Yeah, I mean, there's this running gag about characters just theorizing that this is just animals. You know, somebody will be like, maybe an animal did it. And then someone always, it's like a call and response, maybe several animals. This happens like four or five times. And again, it's just you downplay because what the hell else are you going to do?
Yeah.
It couldn't be zombies. Maybe it's several animals. Mm-hmm. That'll make us feel better.
I do have a bit of a criticism of the zombies, though.
Mm-hmm.
And this is as somebody who's just, you know, as I've mentioned before on this show, a bit of a corpse enthusiast. I was kind of bothered by how all the zombies seem to be at similar levels of decay and decomp.
Mm-hmm.
Because judging by their outfits, they were all from a lot of different eras. Because the zombies are popping out of graves for the most part at the beginning of this. The zombies are corpses zombifying, coming out of graves. That's where it all begins. And there are zombies from several different decades, and they were all at similar stages of decay. And that's just, I want, that bothered, it shouldn't bother me this much, but it bothered me because I was like, not all those corpses are going to be at that same level of decay. That must have been some damn good embalming if that one fucking person who's wearing a mourning gown from the 1800s is looking like they died 5 years ago.
My counterpoint thought that I had during the movie was, wow, this is pretty decent makeup for the budget this was probably working with.
Great makeup.
I was actually kind of surprised at the quality and some of the fabrication that went into, you know, creating decapitated heads of certain characters.
Yeah. My logic brain just kicked in a little bit too much with the level of decomposition for a lot of these zombies.
Yeah. Well, I think the level of decomposition on the first half of our conversation here is advanced. So let's review this movie and then discuss some of the, you know, the spoilers. It feels almost weird to say there are spoilers in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's not really that kind of movie, but, you know, there's surprises.
There's things that deserve to be hidden behind the spoiler room door.
Yes.
So, Patrick, I feel like I know what you're going to rate this, but what are you rating this?
I kind of already tipped my hand, but I'll give it a view. I was not expecting to, just because I had heard pretty bad things about this, and it was hard for me to imagine, as I said last episode, how you could fuck this up with, you know, a director who I adore and all these actors who I adore. And, you know, I think it benefits certainly from the fact that it does feel kind of like a hangout movie, like I said before. And if you give me a hangout movie directed by Jim Jarmusch with all these people, I'm probably going to enjoy it. You know, no surprise, honestly, that I ended up just having a very, very good time with this. And it also ended up feeling surprisingly politically relevant to me, which might just be coincidence, a product of the current time that we're in. I do think his approach to the politics of it all was a little haphazard. I don't think there was quite as much there. I don't think it's quite as intentional necessarily, but it worked very well on that level for me too. I had a great time with this. So view it. How about you, Allison with a Y?
Okay, I am going to give it, I'm going to give it a high Q it. I can't give it a view it because I did sort of struggle with the dichotomy of the genre and the actual movie that was presented. I give it a high Q it in the sense that if you're going to watch this, and I recommend you do watch this in a lot of ways, but you need to adjust your expectations going into it. Expect something a lot slower paced. Expect something that's going to have a lot of air to it. But if you are down with that and if that sounds good to you, definitely, definitely give it a watch. Because it's a really, really unique experience. And I think it's a unique experience that deserves more love than it's gotten. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of the reviews as well watching this.
I didn't. Interesting. What? Any interesting takeaways?
Oh, people fucking hated it.
Ghouls.
People were like, it was such a snoozer, which I guess I understand, but they were like, yeah, it was just like so slow, so boring, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I can see where they're coming from.
I get if you're a mainstream movie viewer expecting a mainstream movie, which as we said, you can't blame anyone for expecting necessarily.
Yes.
If you see the trailer for this in front of fucking, you know, whatever disposable piece of horror trash came out in the theater in 2019. Like,
right.
I get it.
So that's why I give it, like, I'm not going to give it a view it because I don't necessarily think you should just go run and watch this.
Is it a view it for you as an individual?
I don't know. I'm very much between a view it and a cue it, which is why I'm giving it a high cue it.
Yeah. I mean, still, frankly, collectively, I think our review is far better than most of the reception that it got when it came out.
Yeah, I agree.
So we are headed down to the, where are we going this week in the spoiler room? Spoiler graveyard, spoiler police station.
Spoiler, probably squad car.
Spoiler squad car. Spoiler juvenile detention center. That's where we belong. But before we go there, we will encourage you, as always, to visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. You can find every one of the nearly 200 episodes we've ever done there. And you can also find a link to our merch store where you can get t-shirts and coffee cups and other merchandise with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art that I designed on it. You can also find us on social media.
At Facebook, YouTube, Blue Sky, Instagram at Amoncast, EHMONCAST, Amoncast, or on TikTok at Amon Podcast, EHMON Podcast. Leave us some comments. Let us know how you are feeling about the show, as well as leave a review for us. But we only accept 5 stars, FYI. If you give us less than 5 stars,
we will decapitate you with a single blow of
a
katana.
Holy shit, that is for comedy purposes only? That's not a real threat.
Or is it?
Oh my god.
Oh wait, we forgot to mention Discord. Go hang out with us on Discord too. We got a link to that in the show notes. What the hell? Okay, we're going to the juvenile detention center now.
Bye.
Okay, we are back. We have gone to the spoiler juvenile detention center. We're in the spoiler squad car, and we are out patrolling for zombie spoilers. Yeah, for spoilers, for the dead don't die. So, I mean, all things considered, we keep saying how unconventional this is, but it's an eventful final act, I would say. There's a lot going on.
A lot happens.
Maybe just as a result of there being so many fucking characters.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And because there's so many fucking characters, so many people die.
Yeah.
This is a bloodbath. Not a gruesome, not a particularly super gory, super graphic bloodbath. But it is a bloodbath. Because, well, now that we're in the spoiler room, nobody makes it out.
Well, except for Tom Waits.
Well, except for Tom Waits. That's true.
Who holds like a mythic narrator-esque power in this. He talks a lot to himself, but kind of to us, really.
Yes. Yeah, he's very omnipresent in this.
Yeah. He's in the woods. He's always kind of creeping around looking for things, and he seems to know more than most people in this.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, though, yeah, basically, does everyone die?
I think everybody dies except Tom Waits. Well, and Tilda Swinton, which is very notable.
Yeah, let's just get to that.
Yeah, let's get to that, because that might be, I think, the wildest thing that happened
in
this entire film.
So for starters, we'll build up to it and then get to the big spoiler. But she goes to the police station, basically takes over the police station. Not like a forcible takeover, but they're like, you seem like you know shit, because
she's very,
she does.
She's very competent. She's clearly very skilled at murking zombies.
And many things.
And many things.
Including like running a computer. There's an insane scene where she's just like really rapidly typing on a computer and it like turns into the Matrix screen, basically. But she's like running the police station and then eventually goes out to go back to taking out zombies because the police are not doing a very good job of that for a while.
Which, like, you know, bless Adam Driver's character's heart. He is trying his best. Bill Murray's character doesn't want to do anything. Chloe Sevigny's character is afraid of everything. Adam Driver's character is very motivated, but he also says throughout this entire film, he says, this is going to end poorly. Is that his exact words?
This isn't going to end well.
He says that over and over and over again. And there's some meta moments with his character where his character is clued into what's going to happen. Like talking about the theme song that keeps coming in by Sturgill Simpson. Mm-hmm. But he keeps saying this isn't going to end well. And sure enough, oh boy, it don't. But then there's Tilda Swinton's character who is just this, otherworldly.
perhaps more truly otherworldly than Tilda Swinton has ever been.
Which is incredible.
Because a fucking literal flying saucer shows up at the end of the movie. All the zombies go to it. And at first I thought this was going to be like the zombies were somehow alien related and the spaceship was going to beam up the zombies. No, it is exclusively there for Tilda Swinton's character. Yeah. She walks under the fucking tractor beam of the flying saucer, beatific smile on her face, and gets beamed up and the saucer flies away.
And that's that.
And like, that's that.
She was like the one thing helping anyone.
There's no context for anything about aliens prior to this and nothing else about it after that.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I watch it and I think I said out loud, what the fuck?
Yep. But also,
watching it alone, mind you. I was alone and I audibly said, what the fuck?
But also it weirdly makes so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like within its own weird internal logic. And within just like, if you know and love Tilda Swinton, sure. Of course she comes and gets picked up by a fucking UFO.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton would be.
Yeah,
like I wouldn't be surprised if a spaceship flew to Earth very, very clearly and picked up Tilda Swinton. I would say, yeah, that tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. But it's also one of these, you know, you referenced the meta notes, and I want to circle right back around to the cops because obviously that's one of the biggest meta notes in the whole movie. Towards the end, Chloe Sevigny's character basically chooses to be swallowed up by the zombie horde because she sees her dead mom.
Her dead grandma.
Her grandma as a zombie. Can't take it anymore. She's stressed out and she's just like, I'm done. She gets out of the police car.
And she's been stressed out from the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Adam and Bill Murray, who is also lovely in this, we haven't even touched. I mean, again, this is
Bill
how
Murray
many.
Is Bill Murray.
This is how many delightful people are in this movie. We haven't talked about Bill Murray, but yeah, he's in it being Bill Murray, which is always a joy to watch.
Yeah.
But they're the two remaining cops, and Adam keeps, as you said, alluding to how this isn't going to end well, and they finally have a conversation about this towards the end of the movie where Bill says, how do you know? Like, why do you keep, what do you know about all this? And Adam says, I've read the script.
I read the script.
And they have this bizarre conversation where Bill also has read the script, but only the pages that pertain to him, whereas Adam has read the entire script. Bill says something about how much he's worked with this guy and how he always like does this to him with the script, which is a clear reference, obviously, to Bill and Jim Jarmusch having worked together in real life. And what does this accomplish thematically? What is it trying to say? I don't know. And I didn't think about it for more than 2 seconds because I was just like, that's weird and funny. And again, it clicks into this vibe of just, again, a hangout movie. It may as well be a movie about Jim Jarmusch getting his favorite people together to make a zombie movie.
Yeah.
It's such a weird moment. And either because of the tone the film had set up or because I'm just predisposed to enjoy Jarmusch and his weirdness, I was just like, oh yeah, sure. That's funny. That's cool. All right. Move on to the next thing. This doesn't have to mean any more than that.
Yeah.
How did that sit with you?
Okay. That scene kind of made me roll my eyes a little bit.
That's
all
fair.
All of the self-referential moments kind of made me roll my eyes. And they were part of those points where I had to kind of adjust expectations because I was like, okay. I find a lot of self-referential stuff in film to be a little cheap,
mm-hmm.
a little bit for cheap laughs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has a time and place. I think sometimes it's a little bit much. I think usually when it's done, it's a little bit much. And I found it was a little bit much in this film.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood that it matched the tone. So, you know, no hate. Mm-hmm. No hate. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah. A little clunky.
Yeah, it just felt a little awkward, but there were a lot of moments in this film that felt a little bit awkward for me, even though I mostly enjoyed it. Yeah, and that was just kind of like, that was part of that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I would not mount a vigorous defense of that scene to anybody. I think the reasons that I didn't love it, but it just like, I was like, sure, that works. That makes sense, more or less. And I think that's just me coming at it from enjoying Jarmusch being Jarmusch.
In all fairness, I think the one other Jarmusch film that I did watch, like this film made sense within that context.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I needed to see more Jarmusch before seeing this to really understand what I was about to watch.
Well, and to be fair, I don't think like self-referential is usually his bag in this way, but weird certainly is. And this was just weird in
it
a
was
way
weird,
that I
yeah.
was like, okay, sure.
Yeah, and I like weird. I like weird.
Yeah.
I love weird. It's not my type of weird necessarily, and mm-hmm. not to the degree that it was in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else do we have? Selena Gomez and her whole crew.
We don't even see their demise,
no,
I think.
They're already dead.
Yeah.
Well, not dead, but they've been bitten and are probably on their way to transforming by the time
yes.
the cops get there.
Yeah, and then Caleb Landry Jones and Danny Glover's characters who had teamed up, they had successfully fought off a bunch of zombies, but then were overpowered and succumbed to them. Which was a bummer because I was rooting for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that unlikely duo to make it out, but nobody makes it out except Tilda and Hermit Bob.
Mm-hmm. Buscemi gets...
he gets turned into a zombie.
Nailed by zombies and then nailed by, I think, again, the cops.
Yeah.
As a zombie.
Yeah.
So MAGA gets double tapped, I
MAGA
guess.
MAGA gets
in this
double
movie,
tapped.
Which, I mean, we didn't really talk about, but
he has a
hat on in one scene that says, what is it, Make America White Again or
yes,
something?
Yes, literally, like the red cap, white letters,
yeah.
Make America White Again.
Yeah.
I almost threw up in my mouth when I saw that.
That was maybe the cringiest thing in the movie for me was there was a moment, I think in that same scene where... they're talking something about the color black. Like he's with Danny Glover in the diner And Steve Buscemi says something about the color black and how he hates black. And then it's a foot and mouth moment. And he's like, well, I don't mean it like that.
Yeah, I think he's like talking about coffee or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
And then Danny Glover is sitting like across the room from him. And Danny Glover, black.
what?
In case you don't know Danny Glover, in case you weren't a 90s kid who grew up watching Angels in the Outfield, okay? Danny Glover.
Yeah, that was unnecessary.
That was unnecessary. I mean, but it also was of its time because it was the first Trump presidency. That's when it was made. That's when it came out.
I mean, him wearing the hat was fine. I just meant that specific joke was just overly on the nose for me and landed like a wet thud.
Yeah. I think, no matter the year, it would have landed like a wet thud for me.
100%.
It was just a little like, whoo!
Yeah. But regardless, that's not a spoiler. The spoiler is he gets bitten by zombies and then killed as a zombie.
Which is satisfying.
Yeah.
What happens to the juveniles?
The inmates at the juvenile detention center flee the center, observed by Hermit Bob. So yeah, they just get out.
Okay.
So yeah, we do have survivors in them, which is good because they all seem cool.
Right. And also, I'm not a big fan of killing off kids in media. So, okay, so that leaves, what, three kids, Hermit Bob, Tilda Swinton,
right.
Survivors. Okay, yes. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
For a bloodbath of a film.
Yeah. Those are honestly some of the most redeemable characters in the movie.
Yeah.
Not that there's a ton of really bad ones other than Steve Buscemi, but...
Right. I mean, you know, obviously I would have loved Adam Driver to survive, but also he went down in a blaze of glory. He was fighting till the end.
Well, and that's our other big spoiler is finally Bill and Adam decide, all right, you know what? We're going for it. We know that this ends badly because we've read the script, but we're going to make a big last stand against this horde of zombies. And so, yeah, there's a lengthy scene in which they kill a bunch of zombies who we don't know and a bunch of zombies who are transformed characters who we did know. And then they eventually get taken down themselves.
Yeah, but they are fighting till the end.
Yep. And Hermit Bob, so now time to talk about
things. Hermit Bob, Tom Waits.
Hermit Bob, Tom Waits. Is observing all this, and the line that stuck out to me was he said something about how the zombies are the remnants of a materialist people, which kind of tied back to one of my favorite scenes late in the movie when the zombies are just like walking around with their fucking phones, like talking in like zombie language about their phones. And then there's like zombies trying to break into the pharmacy saying like Xanax, Oxy. There's a few different scenes of zombies just like spouting like one word, like commercialist, like products that they are seeking. And George Romero, so many zombie filmmakers have done this, where zombies are symbolic of kind of cultural rot, cultural decay.
Yeah.
And humanity becoming this sort of soulless, faceless, brainless mass. But it worked well for me and felt fresh for me in this because it's also married to, again, what we discussed before, this cast of characters who are just kind of like, and I'm sorry, I keep saying this, but just hope about everything that's going on. Like, what are you going to do?
And that absolutely describes Bill Murray's character, especially throughout the entire film. He's the most, what you going to do? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Kind of just like bumbling Midwestern, sort of like, I didn't ask for this problem and I don't really want to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, or even just Adam being like, ghouls.
Right. But Adam at least is like a little bit more.
He understands the magnitude of the threat a little more.
he's a little bit more willing to face it head on.
Yeah.
Whereas Bill Murray's character is a little more reluctant, like low key, but reluctant. Whereas Chloe Sevigny's character is high key reluctant.
Yeah.
You know, they really span that scale right there.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything groundbreaking, earth shattering to say about, you know, what it means to wear a MAGA hat or what it means to be a racist. But I think there is something not groundbreaking or earth shattering, but I think original and something that felt resonant with me, again, in light of current political social events, to see this representation of the breakdown of society that has been portrayed similarly in a lot of zombie movies, but to again pair that with this just weird nonchalance and deadpan dryness felt very meaningful, funny, and also, yes, scary.
Relevant.
Yeah.
Scary, relevant. See, scary because it is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, obviously we're not in a current zombie apocalypse, but it feels so relevant to sort of people's attitudes right now, where we're all just like living our lives while we're seeing the absolute breakdown of our government function mm-hmm. happening. And we're like, well, I'm just a little dum-dum in capitalism, so I gotta keep going, gotta keep driving to my little jobby job.
We're the remnants of a materialist people.
Right. Like, let me go to my little jobby, let me go to the grocery store. Let mm-hmm. me go, let me go do my little fun little thing mm-hmm. to keep me going.
Yep.
While I'm watching my
Xanax,
yeah,
while Oxy. I'm
watching my society break down in front of my eyes, and all I am trying to do in the meantime is try to survive.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure at some point it's going to swallow me up, but I don't know when that's going to happen, and I guess I'm just going to keep going until it happens.
Here's the God tier take. Is here's where the script scene works is we know this, and now I'm talking about us, you and I, in our current time. We know this doesn't end well. Why? Because we've read the script. You're a fucking history nerd. You've read the script.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and I don't know. I don't know if that was the intention, but I think that was a level that scene worked for me. I mean, I think it's just Jarmusch being a meta little goofball, but it worked for me on that level of, we know this doesn't end well.
If it keeps going down its current path, yes, we know it doesn't end well.
Right.
And we know even if it stopped now, there are still very, very negative impacts for decades to come.
Yeah. Which I think is also why I enjoyed like their last stand. Because it was like, we know this doesn't end well, but we're going to take a shot. We're going to give this our best shot.
And that's who I like to think I would be in the end times. Yeah. It's like, damn it, I know I'm probably going down, but I'm not going down without a fight.
I mean, I think that's who we would both like to think we are right now, that we're like giving our best shot to like still make some dent or have some positive impact in the face of a lot of really scary shit.
Yeah.
And hopefully
that's who we are.
And hopefully Tom Waits is watching over us while we do it.
I hope so. If Tom Waits is spying on me and narrating what I'm doing, I feel like I've done something right with my life.
Yeah, everything's good. We're all good if Tom is watching over us.
Tom, our Holy Ghost.
Mm. The last thing I want to mention here, I made, you know, we take notes for the podcast, and I made a bunch of notes on the spoilers for the movie. And the last thing that I put here is people listen to Sturgill Simpson a lot more. This song plays so many fucking times.
So many times.
It's a good song, though.
It's a great song,
honestly. It's a great song. I love Sturgill Simpson to begin with, and I love his sense of humor. I love that Jarmusch picked him for this, and I love that he wrote this banger of a song.
It's a banger. It's so good. And I was always pleased when like the theme song would come back up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It made me think about the number of bangers that are about zombies, because I think of, you probably don't know this song, but like Rocky Erickson's I Walked With a Zombie is an absolute killer. Of course, the Cranberries Zombie is iconic.
I can't think of a lot of other zombie songs, I'm not going to lie.
Fair. I want a playlist of just those three, and then I feel like I have others to add to it that I'm not even thinking of right now.
There's got to be others for sure, but I don't know them.
I mean, you got to have some Rob Zombie on there, of course.
Take you in the back of my Dragula.
I think we need to like create a playlist of zombie songs. Maybe we should do a TikTok on this, like ask people for their favorite zombie songs and then create a Spotify playlist.
And I think there has to be, okay, because of Shaun of the Dead, Don't Stop Me Now by Queen has to be on there. Because in my humble opinion, the most iconic music scene in a film, like at least it's in my top five. That's
the pub?
Is yes. It? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Yes. Beautifully done. Beautifully choreographed. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Iconic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're making a zombie playlist.
All right. And we'll share it with y'all. We promise.
Yes. But I think that covers our spoilers for The Dead Don't Die, right? I mean, I feel like we've already talked about this movie for longer than the runtime of the fucking movie.
Yeah, probably. I know, there was a lot to talk about.
There was, honestly. Yeah, it's a weird movie. At the very least, it deserves more attention than it's gotten.
Yeah, I fully am on board with people need to give it a better shot with adjusted expectations than they did.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay, that is that on The Dead Don't Die, but what are we watching next episode, Patrick?
It is my turn to pick, and I feel like I made kind of a deranged pick. We're watching Ma.
Good Lord. Oh, my God. The Octavia Spencer movie?
Yes. Yes. The Octavia Spencer movie that I saw trailers for incessantly when it came out.
Incessantly.
And was completely fascinated by the concept of Octavia Spencer being like an evil middle-aged lady who invites kids into her basement and seems cool, like because she wants them to drink and party there, but is actually evil and trying to fuck with them somehow. And then I have seen this movie before. I was a little underwhelmed when I saw it, but obviously it has a reputation, and I thought it would make for a delightful discussion with you and Allison with an I once she has her voice back.
Yeah.
We didn't even mention that. Her voice is gone.
Yeah. Completely
like,
shot.
It's not like, you know, it's not like she's just like, oh guys, I have a sore throat. I can't podcast tonight. No, she doesn't have a voice. She has no voice. Yeah. But yeah, that's what we're watching next time. Ma.
Well, that should also be a banger of a discussion.
I'm very excited. Until then, again, find us online, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com, Amoncast, EHMONcast on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Blue Sky, Amon Podcast, EHMON Podcast on TikTok. And you can also join us on Discord, where we have a lovely community of folks from all over the world who love discussing not just the movies we watch for the podcast, but horror movies, horror books, horror podcasts in general. So you'll find a link to that in the show notes, as well as links to all the other social media and our website and merch store. And lastly, leave us a good review on your podcast provider of choice, or I'll sharpen up the katanas.
Shit.
All right, we got a playlist to make. So until next time, for every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Allison with a Y.
We will see you next time to go to Ma's house.
Ma's house.
See you then.